Acharya Chalaridas Thakur Ki Jai.
Prem Chiko Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Dvaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhaktivinoda Ki Jai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gaur Gopinath Shyamakunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhana Ki Jai. Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai. Mathura Dham Ki Jai. Navadvip Mayapur Dham Ki Jai. Jagannath Puri Dham Ki Jai. Gangamay Jamuna Devi Ki Jai. Bhakti Devi Ki Jai. Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai. Savaita Bhaktivinoda Ki Jai. Gaur Premananda. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada Nama Om Vishnu Padaya. Krishna Prasadaya Bhutale Shri Mati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namaste. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gaurani Vachani Nivasesa Sanyani Paskatyadi Satanya. Vande Hum Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamu Sri Guru and Vaishnavas Cha. Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitham Sam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvajitam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitham Cha. Vanchakapati Pishakam Sindhivajapati Janam Pavaneya Vaishnava. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. April 6, 2015, in Denver, Colorado, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 7, Scheduled Incarnations. With specific functions, text 16. Shudva haristam aranartitam aprameyas.
Shudva haristam aranartitam aprameyas.
Chakra yudhapatagara jabujad hiruda.
Chakra yudhapatagara jabujad hiruda.
Chakrena nakra varanam vini pachitasmad.
Chakrena nakra.
Das de pragrigya bhagavan kripayo ahara.
Das de pragrigya bhagavan kripayo ahara.
Please chant.
Shrutva harishta aranarti namapraveya.
Shrutva harishta aranarti namapraveya.
Chakra yudha patakaraja bujadiruha.
Chakra yudha patakaraja bujadiruha. Thank you.
Shutva.
By hearing.
Hari. The personality of Godhead. Tam. Him. Arana Artinam. One who is in need of help. Aprameya. The unlimitedly powerful Lord. Chakra. Wheel. Ayuda. Equipped with his weapon. Patakaraja. The king of the birds, Garuda. Buddha Adiruddha. Being seated on the wings of. Chakrena. By the wheel. Nakravadanam. The mouth of the crocodile. Vinipatya. Cutting in two. Tasmat. From the mouth of the crocodile. Haste. In the hands. Pragriya. Taking hold of the trunk. Bhagavan. The personality of Godhead. Kripaya. Out of causeless mercy. Ujjahara. Delivered him. I wonder if that Ujjahara means to take. I wonder if Ujja has something to do with up. Like taking it. I didn't have much time by the time you told me the verse. Okay. Ujja. Or Ujjas usually have to do with effulgence or up. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Translation, the personality of Godhead, after hearing the elephant's plea, felt that the elephant needed his immediate help, for he was in great distress. Thus, at once, the Lord appeared there on the wings of the king of birds, Garuda, fully equipped with his weapon, the wheel, Chakra. With the wheel, he cut to pieces the mouth of the crocodile to save the elephant, and he delivered the elephant by lifting him by his trunk. Purport, the Lord resides in his Vaikuntha planet. No one can estimate how far away this planet is situated. It is said, however, that anyone trying to reach that planet by airships or by mineships, traveling for millions of years, will find it still unknown. What Sanskrit verse is Srila Prabhupada paraphrasing there? Fantasticoti Satavatsara Sambhagam. Modern scientists have invented airships which are material, and the yogis make a still finer material attempt to travel by mineships. What does that mean, a mind ship? But what does that mean, actually?
Teleportation.
Oh, yeah, something like teleportation, but in what body?
Subtle body.
Subtle body, right? And have you ever met yogis who can do that? I have. And have you met yogis who can travel in their subtle body to different parts of the universe? Have you? Yeah. When Prabhupada was a little boy, he met a number of different yogis. This was his father would entertain guests. He said his father would have no less than four guests every night. And he once had a yogi who had Prapti Siddhi. He was sitting in Prabhupada's room in his house when he was a little boy. And Prabhupada saw him reach out his hand and get a mango, even though mangoes were out of season. So I actually know two devotees, at least, who claim. I mean, solid people who claim that they have yogic powers, they can travel all over the universe with their mind ships. But neither the airship nor the mind ship has access to the kingdom of God in his Vaikuntha Loka, situated far beyond the material sky. Since this is the situation, how is it possible for the prayers of the elephant to be heard from such an unlimitedly distant place? And how could the Lord at once appear on the spot? So Prabhupada's leading up to this. Right? He's saying, right? That we have material airships, they can only go so far. Mine ships, you can go further. But this Vaikuntha planet the Lord is on is even further. So how could you hear from so far away? And how could you immediately show up from so far away? Right? This is the main argument, by the way, the modern scientists use as to why all of the reports of UFOs must all be false. I don't know if any of you read Sataputra's book, Alien Identities. Any of you read that book? And they'll say, well, it's not possible that these UFOs can be coming from other planets because
there's no life.
There's no life on other planets that are close enough and
intelligent enough.
Yeah, I mean, they may think, maybe they think there's bacteria on Mars or something. But they say there's no intelligent life on any planet close enough to us, therefore... Huh? Well, what, so then why couldn't these be spaceships from other intelligent life?
It would take them too long.
They wouldn't be able to get here. Of course, that's assuming that other intelligent life only has access to the technology that we know about. Yeah, it's a rather large assumption. But Srila Prabhupada here is making this point. You know, how is it possible? How is it possible for somebody to travel that far, that fast, when even the yogis who travel by mind can't get there that fast? And not only travel that fast, but do what? The first word in this verse. Hear. Right? Can we hear something that far away? No. All right, even they have their, the scientists have their satellite dishes trying to pick up, again, you know, some transmission from intelligent life in another planet. But they'll say that if they get a transmission, I mean, according to their science, and I'd say that their science having to do with cosmology and astronomy is one of the least scientific of their science. It's because you can't test it, right? Isn't that correct? If they say Alpha Centauri is so far away, you can't test it. Can you double check it? Do you follow what I'm saying? There's no way you can double check their calculations. Just like in research, we learn that all your research methods have to be valid and reliable. They have to be repeatable. Somebody has to be able to repeat them. And preferably you use something called triangulation, where you use more than one method to see if you get the same results by various methods. So they have their idea with a theory called redshift, with trying to decide how far away the planets are. But there's no double checking of it. But even so, according to their theories upon theories, which cannot be actually checked, they're saying that any sound we would receive with these satellites was actually made millions or billions of years ago, because it's taking so long for sound to get through the universe to reach us. Do you follow that?
Yes.
Okay. So here Prabhupada's making the point, you know, if this is true with the material planets, how is it possible for Lord Vishnu to hear Gajendra from the Vaikuntha planets? So going on here. These things cannot be calculated by human imagination. All this was possible by the unlimited power of the Lord, and therefore the Lord is described here as apramaya, for not even the best human brain can estimate his powers and potencies by mathematical calculation. The Lord can hear from such a distant place. He can eat from there. Not only can he hear from there, he can eat from there. But just imagine. So like nowadays on the computer, right, someone has a birthday, so on Facebook someone will send you a picture of a cake. Right? But you can't eat that. If somebody makes a cake for you in New York and sends you a picture here in Denver, you're not able to eat the cake that's in New York. But Prabhupada says Krishna can eat from there. He can hear from such a distant place, he can eat from there, and he can appear simultaneously in all places at a moment's notice. Such is the omnipotency of the Lord. Shrutva haristram aranarti namapramayas chakra yudha patagaraja bujad ruda chakrain anakra varanam vinipachitasma dhasde pragriha bhagavan kripa yojahara. The personality of Godhead, after hearing the elephant's plea, felt that the elephant needed his immediate help, for he was in great distress. Thus at once the Lord appeared there on the wings of the king of birds, Garuda, fully equipped with his weapon, the wheel chakra. With the wheel, he cut to pieces the mouth of the crocodile to save the elephant, and he delivered the elephant by lifting him with his trunk. We just should note that the Bhagavatam commentator Sridhar Swami says that this word aranartinam, which Prabhupada translates here in the word for word, one who is in need of help, and also means one who is desirous of surrender. So here we're dealing with the fact that is mentioned. Well, where is it mentioned? The basic principle here, that Krishna is very far away, but yet very near. So where is that? Ishapanishad, which mantra?
Five.
Tadure tadvantike. Tadure, dure is very far, very difficult. Tadvantike. Anta is very near. He's very far away and he's very near. He walks and doesn't walk. He's very far away, he's very near. I think these apparent contradictions that Prabhupada said cannot be calculated mathematically. Sometimes atheists give mathematical reasons why God can't exist. They'll make these kind of arguments. Well, he must be very far away. How can he be absorbed, involved in our life? And indeed, sometimes we feel that God is very far away, isn't it? I feel that God is very far away. Inaccessible. Like George Harrison wrote that song, right? It takes so long. And he said, I'm going to show you it doesn't take so long. But sometimes we feel like that. It takes so long. He's so far away. Does he really hear me? Like sometimes you write somebody a letter. Today I think we write most letters electronically. You write somebody a letter and they don't answer you and you wonder, did they get it? Right? Sometimes I get a follow-up letter. Did you get my message? Right? You tell somebody something and did you hear what I said? We may think like that about Krishna. But does he hear me? Does he know I'm talking to him? And in fact, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur brings up this very point. He says that, if people are praying, especially to Govinda, to Rajendra Nandana, to the Lord of Vrindavan, to Radhanath, to Yasoda Nandana, to Subalsaka, is he hearing? Or is he so absorbed in his lila in Goloka Vrindavan that he's not hearing? Right? This question arises. Who's hearing our prayers? Are they really heard? Are they really registered? Are they really answered? And how long is it? It seems like this long, long journey to reach God, especially, of course, in the beginning of Krishna consciousness, as explained in Madhurya Kadambini, you may have some false confidence and you think, oh, now I'm a very spiritual person. And we meet people like this all the time who remind us of what it's like, when you first come to the Hare Krishna movement. Oh, I'm a very spiritual person. I'm going to be God realized probably in a month or two. Right? And then after a while, you start realizing, oh, it's probably a little bit more complicated than that. And you start seeing all this dirt in your heart, and then it starts feeling insurmountable. And you have that pastime where Mahaprabhu told Mukunda, he said, you'll see me after 10 million births. And Mukunda was dancing. Oh, after 10 million births, I'll see you. What kind of goal is there? You'd be excited that you'd achieve it after 10 million births. So it may seem that Krishna is very, very far away, very difficult. He's not hearing us. Everything's taking a very, very long time. But at the same time, Prabhupada says he can appear simultaneously in all places at a moment's notice. And he does hear, and he does heed, and he is there. So how is it that he's far, and how is it that he's near? So how is it that, why can we say that Krishna is far? Goloka eva nivasati akilatma bhuta. That Krishna never takes one step outside Vrindavan. Not one step. He never goes out of Vrindavan. So in that way, he's far. And as Prabhupada's talking about here, it's very far in terms of miles. You can't even be estimated. Like if we want to estimate this, I think, 4 billion mile diameter of the universe, according to Bhagavatam, and then you have the layers, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, ego, the pradhan, each one is 10 times bigger. Nice description of these in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. And then each universe is floating in the causal ocean, which is just a little corner of the spiritual sky, and there's all the Vaikunthas. So how far away in miles cannot even be estimated. So very, very far. And far in mood, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, I am ever detached, seated as though neutral. So because Krishna fully respects the free will of the living entity, actually, there's one place, I wish I'd written down where it was, but there's one lecture where Prabhupada said that Krishna can't interfere with the free will of the living entity because we're part of him, and interfering with our free will would be interfering with his own free will. So he's detached, seated as own neutral. In that sense, he's also very far away. And he's very far away also in that he only accepts love. Bhakti mam abhijananti yavinyas chasmitat vitat toman tatvito natva vishate tadanantara. One can only know Krishna by love. One can't know Krishna. Like, it's really fascinating in the end of the 11th chapter when Krishna says to Arjuna, you can't know me through worship or study the Vedas or vows or this or that or the other thing. And Prabhupada in the purport talks about how we do all those things in bhakti, all those ways that Krishna said we can't know him. Prabhupada takes each one of them and says how we do them in bhakti. But what makes them such that we can know Krishna is the bhakti part. Like patram pushpam palamtayam yome bhaktya prayachati tadaham yakti paritam ashnami parityatmanah. It's the bhakti. And without bhakti, it doesn't matter. You can stand on your toes for a million years and only breathe once a month. You know, you can offer all the incense in the world and distribute all the books in the world and build all the temples in the world and chant all the mantras in the world. And without love, he's inaccessible. He's very far away. Like sometimes in some temples, we say that in the morning before reciting the 10 offenses, right? If one is invested with the 10 offenses, one can go on chanting the holy name for many, many births and one will not achieve the love of God, which is the ultimate goal of his chanting. So Krishna is very far away like that. You can't achieve him. You can't do some ritual to achieve him. You can't do some austerity to achieve him. It just doesn't work. Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, if you're just chanting the mantra, you know, mechanically, you're just saying the alphabet, Krishna's not there. Right? Or there are people who worship the deity, and Bhaktisiddhanta said they're using the shalagram to crack nuts, you know, they're worshiping the deity, but their purpose in worshiping the deity is just so people will respect them and they'll get donations. And you know, Krishna's basically not there. He's not accessible like that. So in that sense, Krishna is very, very far away. Krishna is not attracted to Maya. It doesn't interest him. It doesn't attract him. Many years ago, we had one devotee who was regularly giving nice donations to our Gurukula. And I said, well, we'd like to give you a gift. And we had, through some error, we had ended up having two huge posters of one particular BBT painting. I mean, absolutely huge, that were each framed in a very expensive, very high-class frame. And I said, we end up having an extra one of these. Could we send one to you? And he says, no, in my house is only original art. He says, I don't want a poster. So Krishna's something like that. He's not attracted to the material energy. Maybe you go to some people's houses where they only eat, you know, locally grown, organic, fresh food. And if you, you know, want to bring in some Hostess Twinkies or something, you know, they wouldn't accept it. They say, I'm sorry, you know, we don't have that kind of thing in our house. So Krishna's like that. He's not attracted by the material energy. So in that sense, Krishna's very far away, very inaccessible. We could also say, as far as we're, from our perspective, that's from Krishna's perspective, why he's far away. From our perspective, he's very far away because Ichidvesha. We are filled with desire and hate. And constantly, yes? Attraction and aversion, attraction and aversion, attraction and aversion. Sochichi kanchichi, hankering, lamenting, hankering, lamenting, hankering, lamenting. Which covers us and doesn't allow us to see him. That's the opposite of all the qualities of the saintly person who's equipoise in happiness and distress, heating cold, honor and dishonor, fame and infamy. Equipoise with friends and enemies, and neutral and stone and gold is the same, and etc., etc., etc. All the list of things that one should be neutral to. Well, we tend to be the opposite. We're not neutral to anything. We either want it or we hate it. So how can we see God? Right? And we're covered by the modes of material nature. We're just being swept along by the modes of material nature. Karana guna sangasya. The mode of ignorance says, be rude and insulting and lie and cheat in order to get what you want. And we say, okay. I was talking with someone a few weeks ago who tried to get something by lying. I said, you really shouldn't lie just to get something that you want. And he said, but I really wanted it. I said, well, but if you get it by lying, you're going to have to pay a karmic price later on. Oh, I don't care. He said, better to be honest and accept the fact that you're not going to get that thing. rather than lie to get it and pay for it later. I said, just like if you go to the store and you buy a pair of shoes for $30, and let's say you earn $30 an hour, so that's been an hour of your time. But if you steal the shoes, then you get taken down to the police station, and you know, then you have to go through the court thing, and you have to pay a lawyer, and all this stuff. Doesn't that take any more than an hour of your time? So what's a better way to pay for the shoes? To buy them or to steal them? And this person said to me, well, I'm just not like that. If I want something, I'm just going to do whatever I need to do to get it. So that's tamagun. So we become under tamagun. I'm just going to do whatever I have to do to get what I want. Or we come under rajagun. I'm going to get what I want by being a good person in the world. Everybody look at me, see how good I am. Put my statue up in the park. I'm going to be a good, righteous person, and I'm going to expand my kingdom. You know, I'm going to have a 5-story house and 3 jaguars in my garage. Or we're influenced by goodness. I'm such a spiritual person. I'm so equipoised. I'm so forgiving. I'm in balance with nature. I am spiritual and I am good. Right? And covered by these 3 modes, avijñānti mām buddhā manusyam tanu māsrita, ahaṅkāra vimuddhā. We can't understand Krishna. We can't see him. We have this covering over us. Right? Even you could say sattva, which is clear, but it's still a block. You know, sattva is like being in a house with no windows, and raja is like being in a house with translucent windows. Sattva is like being in a house with transparent windows, but you're still in the house. You're not out. You're not free. We can't access him. And also because of our association, we were saying karna guna sangasya, we tend to fall into bad association that makes us forget God, especially in the Kali Yuga, especially now in the Kali Yuga. Our bad association is everywhere, isn't it? I mean, it even seeps into our temples. Somebody will come into our temples and just be, anyway, you know what this devotee did, and you know what that devotee did, and this devotee has bad motives, and that devotee has bad motives, and this devotee is really a cheater, and that devotee is really a cheater, and right? It's like, you know, when I was in Bahrain, they said sometimes they have sandstorms, and no matter how tightly they close their windows, you know, some of the sand comes in the house. Even we try to make these oases, you know, still some of this stuff comes in. And very hard to be free of bad association. Sometimes we are our own bad association. And then, Dura, we have this word Dura again, like from the Ishopanishad, Tadure. So we're dealing with Krishna's energy that's covering us, and it's we can't get out of it. It's kind of like you're in a maximum high security prison, you know. Like they have these prisons where they say nobody's escaped. I remember years ago. Now I don't get them anymore, but I used to get snail mail, maybe because I don't have a snail mail address anymore, but I used to get snail mail from prisoners who were reading my articles in Back to Godhead. And one prisoner who was writing me frequently was obviously not right. You know, there was something really wrong with this person, and it was kind of scary. So I called the prison and I said, you know, I'm getting repeated letters from this person, and it seems this person is unhinged. And they said, well, you have called the maximum security prison for the criminally insane. Oh. They said, don't worry, nobody ever gets out of here. So it's kind of like that in the material world. You know, we have Mama Maya Duretya. That even though as a living entity we're superior to material nature, we are a superior energy, still, by Krishna's will, as a divine energy, when it covers us, we can't get out of it. So in those ways, Krishna is very far away. So you know I'll thoroughly discourage. That's good. No, seriously, that was my purpose. We should feel sometimes like that. Hopeless, yes? You don't want to be proud. Oh, Krishna's easy. I got him in the palm of my hand. I see sometimes with our Gurukulis, the people born in the movement, they have this thing about 16 rounds. They think, if I were to chant 16 rounds, I would become a pure devotee like that. That's somehow the secret. And they'll chant 16 rounds for a few days, and they'll say, oh, it didn't work, and then they stop. I've seen that over and over and over again. So we don't want to have this kind of false confidence. You know, Krishna's in my pocket. All right, but why is he very near? Ishram sarvabhutana riddesha ajumajistati. Sarvashita ham riddhisandhivista. Krishna's in our heart. That's pretty close. Can't get much closer than that, can you? Suridam. Best friend in the heart, surit next to the heart, and in every atom, ekopisora chaitam jagananda koti, that shaktirasti jagananda chayayananta, andantarasta panamanu chayantarasta. How are you getting closer than that? You can't get closer than that. He's in the heart, he's in every atom. Every atom. That means every atom of the gases in the air, every atom of my body, right? And right there in the heart. And he's very close in that he really cares. He's full of love. Although he's detached and seated as though neutral because he respects our free will. He respects our free will also out of love. Now you can be very close to somebody, like if you've ever been in India. If you've ever been in India, you've often been very close to people. Hare Krishna. If you haven't been in India, you don't know what I'm talking about. Actually, on Lord Chaitanya's 500th anniversary, my husband had to take our daughter and put her up on his shoulders, or she would have died from the crowds. And so you get really, really close to people in terms of geographical proximity, but you're not necessarily actually close to them, right? You can be sitting on a bus, on a plane, on a train, and you can be sitting really close to somebody. You can be squished. You know, in rush hour, I saw a video once of, I think it was China or Japan, where the guys on the train station actually pushed the people into the trains. It's one of those things you see and you go, ugh. But you're not really close to any of those people, are you? So not only is Krishna close by being in our heart and being in every atom, he's close to us in that he deeply cares, and he cares more than anybody. If we think of who cares the most about us, so maybe for some of us it's our mother, maybe for some of us our father, maybe for some people they think it's their dog. Who cares the most about them? Even if my wife hates me, my dog loves me. But if we really think about it, I mean, all the people we think are really close to us and really love us, do they always fully understand us? Even those who are really close, you know, even the people who can finish our sentences, right, do they fully and completely understand us? I read about these Siamese twins, these girls who have, like, they share one body and just have two heads. So they're so close that they can move they can type. One of them controls the right arm and one of them controls the left arm. One of them controls the right leg, one of them controls the left leg. But they can type and they can walk. That's pretty much in sync, right? But you know what? They said sometimes they argue. Pretty inconvenient to argue with somebody when you share the same body. But the point is, sometimes they don't understand each other. Even though they're so much in sync that they can type and they can walk. I don't know how in the world they do that. How do they type? Inconceivable. But still, they don't always understand each other. But Krishna always fully understands us, fully and completely. He knows everything about us. Everything. And he still loves us, even though he knows everything about us, which is, frankly, pretty amazing. Most of us are terrified to ever tell anybody everything about us. Because we're sure if I ever told anybody everything about me, they certainly wouldn't like me. If we took every single thought we had yesterday, you know, and put it on a piece of paper and sent it around to our friends, you know, how many of them would still be our friends? Oh my God, you thought that at 2 o'clock in the afternoon? I don't want anything to do with you. But Krishna's hearing all of our thoughts and he's still our friends. He hears all of our desires. Do we sometimes have evil desires? Yes? I'm not going to ask you to raise your hands. And maybe sometimes we've actually even done evil things? All right, Krishna. And Krishna's still our friend. So who's closer than that? I mean, I remember when I was a kid, at summer camp, we did a play of Franz Kafka's Metamorphosis where these people, this family wakes up in the morning and their son's been transformed into a giant cockroach. They didn't like him anymore. I mean, could you imagine that? You know, the Brahmacharya ashram go to wake up, you know, Brahmacharya hasn't shown up for Mangal Arati, and you go to wake him up and there's just this huge cockroach in his bed with his dhoti on, you know. But Krishna still loves us. He still stays with us. Well, who's closer than that? Even if we take birth as poison ivy, you know, think of how much envy you'd have to take birth as poison ivy. Touch me and I'll make you suffer for 3 weeks. And he stays in the heart. He's also very close because he's very grateful. Patram pushpam pulam toyam. You just give him a little water. Who are you going to satisfy with a little water? The wife says to her husband, I gave you some water today, isn't that enough? I mean, but Krishna is satisfied, very, very little, very, very grateful. It's one of Krishna's qualities, he's very, very grateful. And he only sees the good. He only sees the good. I was just yesterday reading in Nanda Vrindavan Champu the Putana pastime. And when Pundarik Vijayanidhi, when he heard that verse in the Bhagavatam, he immediately felt ecstatic. You've already given yourself to Putana. What more is there to give to anybody else? What could you possibly give to the residents of Vrindavan after you've already given yourself to Putana? Would we see any good in Putana? I mean, seriously, would we see any good in Putana? Was all deceit. Usually if we deal with people like that, we reject them forever. Someone pretends to be a friend and, you know, they come across as if they're loving, but their purpose is entirely malicious. 100%. Their purpose was 100% malicious. And Krishna saw the good. Her method of trying to kill me was motherly. Can you imagine? Right? Someone puts poison in your food, would you say, well, at least they wanted to kill me by feeding me? Feeding is giving someone food. That's an exchange of love, right? It's one of the six exchanges of love, is giving somebody food. So look at that. They were doing a loving exchange. But there was poison in the food. No, but it was love. So how close is that kind of a person? I mean, we would like that the people in our life see the good in us and overlook the evil. We don't always return the favor. But Krishna does this to an extreme. You know, you can be a cow killer abortionist, and if you say, I'm going to the Cinerama, all of your karma is destroyed. That's pretty amazing. If you're a Muslim and you see a pig, you know that some of the Muslims don't like pigs so much that in the Arab countries, they won't allow the word pig to appear in a book. In the schools, they go through the children's books. I mean, I've been in these countries, okay, and I've seen this, so I'm not just making this up. And I've talked to the people leading education in these countries, and they told me, they said, in our curriculum materials for our children, we cannot have the word pig appear. Interesting. Somehow the kids have to grow up not knowing that pigs exist. So they have this word haram, which means condemned. It's haram. Pigs are haram. There's some ordinary Muslim who just says, oh, that's haram. Huh? He said haram. Oh, ram. And Krishna gets all excited. So how close is a person like that? And he's very close and he's very accessible because he's the one in control of Maya. He can say to Maya, okay, that's it. Like the president who can, or the governor even, who can just pardon somebody and just say, okay, let them out of prison, that's it. Whatever they've done, doesn't matter. Let them go. Now that's from Krishna's perspective, how Krishna is very close. Now from our perspective, how is it that Krishna is very close? From our perspective, we're factually already perfect. We don't have to become perfect. All we have to do is remove the covering over our existing perfection. Prabhupada will often say, we're not really conditioned. We're just the observer. We're not really doing anything in this world. That what we want is already there. It's already who we are. It's not something we have to achieve. The example sometimes giving, like the walking propensity, is already present in a normal, healthy child. One of the things they do when a baby's born is it's part of what's called the Apgar score. They hold the baby up and they see if the child naturally puts one foot in front of another. As part of the score of health. Newborn, right out of the womb. Pick up the baby, does the baby put, literally right out of the womb. They do the Apgar score immediately after birth. Does the child put one foot and one in front of the other? So walking is inherent. Therefore, if you're normal and healthy, and you're not, tied down your whole life by some abusive person or something like that, you're going to walk. It's already there. Now, being a ballet dancer isn't inherent, huh? But Krishna consciousness isn't like being a ballet dancer or being an Olympic gymnast, that's not inherent. That's inherent in a monkey. The Vrindavan monkeys, they're all inherently Olympic gymnasts. If you ever watch them, they're much more entertaining than the gymnasts on the Olympics. Right? We see some pretty things, some amazing things from those monkeys in Vrindavan. Right? We were in a rickshaw with my daughter, and one minute she had her glasses, and the next second they were gone. It's like, whoosh! Right? But that's not inherent in the human body. But walking is. So our spiritual perfection is inherent in us. It's not like something that's artificial, that you have to work really, really hard through a lot of practice to achieve. It's something that's already there. Therefore, in that sense, Krishna is very close. Krishna is also very close in that there's many, many means of purification. In Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which Prabhupada translated as the Nectar Devotion, there's a list of all different ways you can attain perfection instantly. You can attain perfection instantly just by following the Rathyatrakar, just by taking some Charanamrita, just by taking the dust from the feet of a devotee, just by taking the food remnants of a devotee, just by saying the holy name of Krishna once in purity, right? So many ways. So many ways. Just by seeing the face of the deity lit by the arti lamps. Just by residing in Mathura for 3 days. Just by an 11th of a second association with a devotee. So many means of approaching Krishna. So many means of meditating on Krishna. You can meditate on Krishna with the gopis, with the coward boys, with Madhya Sodhi. You can meditate on Krishna as the light in all luminous objects. You can meditate on Krishna's joining with the air, incoming and outgoing, and digesting the foodstuffs. You can meditate on Krishna's your own ability. You can meditate on Krishna in the battle of Kurukshetra. You can meditate on Krishna fighting with Jarasandha and creating rivers of blood. You can meditate on different forms of Nisinga and Rama and Varaha. There are so many ways to approach Krishna. Like you have a call a company and they have contact info, and sometimes they only have an email, So Krishna has so many ways. He doesn't just have an email and a phone and a mailing address, and he's got millions and millions of ways you can access him. So in that way, he's very close. He's also very close by the fact that our only qualification to go back to home, back to Godhead, is our first canto. Prabhupada says the unhappy materialist can get out of the material nature. He talks about the need of the soul. What does Prabhupada say, the need of the soul? The need of the soul is for what? First canto. Freedom. Absolute freedom. The need of the soul. The need of the soul is for freedom. And he says the unhappy materialist can get to the light and the freedom simply by desiring to do so. Well, that's pretty close, isn't it? Simply by desiring to do so. So Krishna's very far, but he's also very close. So now do we feel a little bit more encouraged? Do you feel some relief? Well, that's good. Okay. So what is it that determines whether Krishna is very far or Krishna is very close? Dadure Tadvantike. So that is our word here. Aranartinam. How eager we are to surrender. Krishna is responding. Yetamam prapadjante. Krishna is responding. If you want him to stay away, you know what? He'll stay away. You ever felt like that? Okay, Krishna, just don't bother me right now. Or I think I told you how one devotee was contacted me and he said, you know, things are really dry in my spiritual life. Everything's become dry. And after talking to him for a half an hour, he revealed, yeah, I was praying to Krishna, just go easy with me, okay? So do we tell Krishna to stay away? Prabhupada says, if you don't want to be purified, if you want to have things remain as they are, Krishna's not going to force. Actually, can't force, because we always have free will. Even if Krishna puts us in a situation where surrender is the only viable option, it's the only good choice, we can still make a bad choice. Like Ravana, right? His brothers, his sons, Kumbhakarna, Indrajit were killed. You know, you'd think that he would, at that point, say, don't think I'm going to win this battle. Kind of like what we Americans had to do in Vietnam. We finally had to say, I don't think we're going to win this. But Ravana never got to that point. Never got to the point where he said, I don't think I'm going to win this. Let me just surrender. Duryodhana sees the universal form and he says, oh, that's a nice mystic trick. Kaliya sees Krishna. Oh, what a Kaliya. What a beautiful, let me kill him. Right? Or Kalyavane sees Krishna and he says, oh, that's who Narada then told me about. Let me kill him. It's not really Krishna's responsibility. Sometimes we think if Krishna would just show up in front of me, if Krishna would just make it easier, it's his fault. He's the one who put me on the earth planet in Kali Yuga. He's the one that gave me this and that problem in my life. He gave me a bad husband, bad wife, guru that fell down, whatever, you know. It's all his problem. That's why I'm not Krishna conscious. So many times Prabhupada said this, it's a matter of a moment only. That if we were to fully surrender, then Krishna would be fully present. So why don't we fully surrender? We don't fully surrender because we're afraid. Therefore, this gradual increase of faith. But at least we should be taking a step towards surrender, a step towards increasing our faith. Don't get stuck and don't go backwards. And to be introspective enough to know, am I stuck? Am I stuck? And one time I was visiting Vrindavan, and one devotee asked me to get a CD from a particular place. I really didn't want to go, but to please this devotee, I went because I knew what I was going to get into. So I went to get the CD, and I go into this place, it's all dark, all the curtains are closed. It's all musty, and no fresh air in there. And the devotee who's in there says, where's the bliss? He said, used to be when I came to Vrindavan, everybody was blissful. Now nobody's blissful anymore. Now this problem, that problem. And I said, you know, Prabhu, if you were to get out of your room, there's a lot of bliss in Vrindavan. Then what can you do? Like Prabhupada says, you know, the owl doesn't see the sun. So we need to be introspective. If I'm at a point where things are dry, I'm not making progress, I don't feel like I'm advancing, what can I do to surrender more? What can I do to increase my faith that I can surrender more? How, and Prabhupada says you take a step towards Krishna and he takes 10 steps towards you. And what's really, really nice, my dear friends, is that if we just take a step to Krishna, all of the big problems that we think we have disappear. And this is nicely explained by the demigods. This is another Tadjare Tadvantike. In, I believe it's the second chapter of the 10th canto, where the demigods are praying to Krishna in the womb. And they say that there's this ocean, right? This ocean of material entanglement. When we look at this far away, it's an ocean. How are you going to cross the ocean? So you guys never seen the oceans here. Some of you go to the beach, yes? Some of you say you like to go to the beach. I'm not sure what beach you go to. But if you've ever been to an ocean, or maybe seen a picture of an ocean, it's big. I guess your closest ocean is the Pacific. What's closer, the Pacific or the Gulf of Mexico? Pacific. Most of you have been there? Most of you have seen the Pacific? That's big. I mean, it's really big. Vikram and I crossed the Pacific. We went from Sydney to L.A. How long did that take?
14.
About 14 hours on a plane. That's big. They have this big ocean of impossible. It's just impossible. I'm so full of lust, anger, envy, greed, illusion, and I just, yeah. And Krishna's all the way in Goloka Vrindavan. You know, the demigod said, there's this boat on the shore of Krishna's lotus feet. And I said, it's really peculiar, though. It's really peculiar that the saintly persons get in the boat and cross the ocean. And what's peculiar? What's strange?
The boat stays on.
The boat doesn't move. I tell you, when we got in that plane in Sydney and went to L.A., the plane went with us. Right? Then the plane was in Sydney. I was talking to my former student, Surya, who was, I don't know, 13 years, was a supervisor, flight attendant for United. And I asked her if she was flying around the time of 9/11, and she said, no, she said, but they had to call me to take a plane, I think it was to Sao Paulo. She said there were only like 10 people on the plane flying to Sao Paulo, but we had to get the plane to Sao Paulo. It was in the wrong place. So, you know, when you travel in a plane or a boat, it moves with you. But the demigod said, this boat doesn't move with you. Why? Why doesn't the boat move?
Because the ocean shrinks.
Because the ocean shrinks. The boat doesn't need to move. And when does the ocean shrink? Do you have to get in the boat?
When you approach
the boat. You don't need to approach the boat. You don't even need to get into it. So Maya says to us, oh, it's a big ocean. You'll never cross. Don't even try. But just approach the boat, and there's no more ocean. It's gone. And you step over it as easily as you'd step over a little, you know, tiny little puddle like made by some German shepherd or something. Footprint. So are we doing that? Are we doing that? Are we taking the things in our life that we need to deal with to get closer to Krishna? And are we really approaching the boat? Are we saying to Krishna, Krishna, I surrender to you. Help me deal with this thing in my life. Show me what it really is. Show me the next step. If I already know the next step, help me to deal with this. Help me to accept what I need to accept, to reject what I need to reject. Help me to surrender to you. Help me to depend on you as my maintainer, as my protector. And if we do that, we'll find that actually Krishna consciousness is very easy. And if we don't do that, we'll find that it's very difficult. So, questions, comments? Do we have any time for questions? It's 9 o'clock. Yes?
You were saying, like, all the parties and service that we do, you're mentioning about all these different services we do, but if we don't have love, so how do you express love if not through service?
How do you express love if not through service? That's true. If you have love, you will serve. But if you serve, do you necessarily love?
It's a start, it's a demonstration.
Not necessarily. If you have love, you will serve. But if you serve, you don't necessarily love. If there's rain, there's clouds. But if there's clouds, there's not necessarily rain. People can serve without any love. Service does not equal love. Love, real love, will be demonstrated by service. But service alone is not love. It's not an evidence of love. We'd say in logic, it's necessary but not sufficient. One thing we did in our Gurukuls was teach logic, following Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He taught logic in his Tao.
So what is the nature of love? Is it a feeling, like a mother expresses love by taking care of the
And then
child?
Again, you're going for services, your evidence procedure. Prabhupada used the word devotional service, not just service and not just devotion, both devotional service. Or how does Rupa Goswami describe it? Shilanam, and Shilanam is described as having two actions, mental and physical. And anukulyena, the most important word in the definition, the verse that defines bhakti. Anyabhilasita sunyam. You all know this verse? Everybody? Can we say it together? Anyabhilasita sunyam gyanakama anavratam anukulena krishna anujimanam bhakti rutamam. So the most important word in that verse is anukulena. It's got to be favorable to Krishna. In other words, the motive has to be to please Krishna. Now, if you're doing external service without that motive, it counts as something. What does it count as? Agyata Sukriti. Which, when it builds up, gives you a chance for bhakti. I was just hearing Prabhupada say that this morning. So, service is necessary but not sufficient. Emotion is necessary but not sufficient. There has to be both emotion and service for it to be bhakti. It has to be both.
But if it's not there, you're trying to muster it up and summon it. Because it's not there, the feeling, the devotion, but you're trying.
If you're trying, then that's an emotion. Yes? Then that is there. Maybe in the beginning stage, but it's there. But just like, you know, you could have the wife washes the dishes and you can have a paid servant wash the dishes. It's not the action of washing the dishes. You follow? The paid servant who's washing the dishes is not, we hope, making any effort to feel love for the husband by washing the dishes. If she is, that's actually improper. You understand? She's not even making an effort. Hopefully the wife is making an effort if it's not there naturally. You understand? So sadhana bhakti, vaidhi sadhana, sadhana in general, implies that there's some sort of effort made with the will. Not needing an effort made by the will happens at what stage of bhakti according to Madhurya Kanambani? At what stage is no effort by the will needed anymore? A shakti. And a shakti is still in sadhana. A shakti is the last stage of sadhana. But at that point, there's no effort needed by the will. Krishna Chakravarti Thakur says, at that point, even if somebody's talking about something mundane, your thoughts will naturally go to Krishna. Even if someone's talking about, you know, who won the, what was the latest? Basketball. College basketball. Who won the latest college basketball, right? We were talking about that with that guy on the airplane. And your thoughts will immediately go to Krishna. Oh, Krishna likes to play games with his friends. Without, you won't have to make an effort. So that's a dashakti. You don't have to think, okay, how can I remember Krishna right now? Yeah, Krishna's a light and all luminous objects, so we meditate on it. It just flows. Even at nishta and ruchi, some effort is needed. It's minimal. It's minimal, but there's still some effort. There's still some effort of the will at nishta. So that's the definition of sadhana bhakti. And even in a shakti, it's still sadhana. Until bhava, it's where it's sadhya. You're still making some effort. The effort being made of it in a shakti is of a different nature, but it's still an effort and there's still a practice going on. So in whether it's vaidhi sadhana bhakti or anista sadhana bhakti, you have to make a lot of effort. Prabhupada says until nista, it's a hard struggle with determination. So until you're at least 50% free of the modes of passion and ignorance, it's going to be a hard struggle with determination. And you're going to be motivated mostly by the Shastric injunctions. That there's no help for that. But why are you following the Shastric injunctions? Because you have some desire to love Krishna. Otherwise, it's not bhakti. If the reason you're following, it's not uttam bhakti, it's mixed bhakti. If the reason you're following the Shastric injunctions is you want liberation, or the reason you're following the Shastric injunctions is you want a big house by the ocean with a gorgeous wife and a German shepherd or something like that, then it's karma jnana anavratam. Then it's covered. You follow? It's not uttam bhakti. Or actually, that would be anyasanyabhilasitasunyam. That would be what your motivator. Jnanakana anavratam is your method. Anyasanyabhilasitasunyam is your motivator. So if the main reason you're doing bhakti is to get some karma or gyan, it's not pure bhakti that you're doing. It's still bhakti, you know, but it's not pure bhakti. So it takes longer to achieve. But if your reason for following the scriptural injunctions is you have some taste, Rupa Goswami says the qualification for taking up Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti is you have some taste. And you're neither too attached nor too detached. That's the qualification for taking up Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. And then there's Majjham, Kanistha, and Uttam qualification. There's some taste, yes? Do you want to love Krishna, yes? Do you like Krishna?
Hopefully.
That wasn't very... At least your eyes lit up. Your mouth didn't light up, but your eyes lit up. Your eyes lit up and then your mouth turned down. There you go. That's better. Do you want to love Krishna?
Yes.
That was a little better. Isn't that why you're here? Is there any material reason why you're here? I mean, would this be the right place to come for a material reason? It would be? Really? Seriously?
Yeah.
Really? That's not my experience. I think you want material things, a lot better places to go than the heart vision. We're not very expert at that kind of thing. It's not what we're here for. It's not our expertise. Sorry, you come to the wrong place. So that's still what's driving you. Even if you're doing it out of obedience to the scriptures, that should be the driver. And if you forget that that's what's the driver, then keep reminding yourself. That's why we want to hear every day. That's why we want to associate every day. So keep reminding myself, what's my driver? What's my driver? What's my motive? What's my motive? Like that. Is that all right? But just doing service empty in a mechanical way, that's just Krishna Karmani or Agata Sukriti. It's something. It's something. But it's not really bhakti. Yes?
I recently sort of accidentally found myself kind of indulging and observing like a rock star with a lot of like really attractive qualities, and the kind of person with like a lot of charisma that you just want to observe and you kind of get obsessed with.
Okay, all right.
And I'm just wondering, because I was also in an ashram where everyone's trying to appreciate Krishna, and I know that when I'm hearing about Krishna's qualities and attractive qualities, I think it doesn't register sadhana or taste for him. I'm just wondering if somehow you can if you accidentally find yourself, you know, getting into Maya, can you sort of try to dovetail that into seeing like, well, these attractive qualities in human beings originates in Krishna.
Absolutely.
So trying to understand
Absolutely.
Little things about Radha and Krishna.
Totally.
Things that you don't really get, and not really
Absolutely.
But then you see a material version of it, people imitate Krishna with good material karma or whatever.
That's exactly what you should do.
Okay.
Totally. You're completely 100% on the right track. Bhagavad Gita 7, 9, 10, and 15. Of fishes, I am the shark. Of mountains, I am the Himalayas. Of generals, I am Kartikeya. I don't know, you know, he didn't say of rock stars I am. But the principle's there. Know that any beautiful, wonder, glorious creations. Prabhupada said any political leader we see as a representative of God. That they're in. And a number of places Prabhupada taught, anybody who displays something wonderful, I am the ability in man. Anyone who has some extraordinary opulence, we see, oh, that's Krishna's vibhuti. And wow, if this rock star could be so amazing, how amazing is Krishna? I mean, when I was an administrator in a public school, I remember at one time the kids did this gymnastics demonstration as part of their PE class, and I was just sitting there meditating in Rasleela. And I was just thinking, wow, you know, what would it be like to just see the Rasleela? That's exactly what we should be doing. Every single thing in the world should be what's called an udipan, or a stimulus, to have us remember Krishna. Lord Chaitanya saw the son of Maharaj Pratiparudra, and he said, this boy reminds me of Krishna. He saw a sand dune, and he said, oh, Govardhan Hill. He saw the ocean, he said, the Yamuna. That's exactly what we should be doing. And when we do that, there is no more material world. It's just hearing Prabhupada say that this morning. There's no more material world, no more material consciousness. Now, some people, you know, they're dealing more with the duality. Okay, that's Maya. All right. But better is, you know, oh, if that's so nice, how nice must be Krishna? He probably even said you could tell people drinking alcohol to appreciate Krishna and the taste of the wine, you know that. I mean, that's not meaning that we should go and drink wine. But if someone's already drinking wine, they can appreciate Krishna's the taste of the wine. And Prabhupada said, someday they'll become a saintly person. So, definitely. What will happen if you do that is eventually you'll lose your attraction for the little sparks. And you'll just see Krishna everywhere. Premanjana charita bhakti vilochanena santas sadaiva vadeo shivilo kanyati. Yamshaima sundaram achinchipinasarupa. Like what Chaitanya told Ramananda Roy. He said, great saintly persons, they don't really see the things in the material world. They just see, oh, there's Krishna's energy, there's Krishna's energy, there's Krishna's energy. That reminds me of this thing of Krishna. That reminds me of this thing of Krishna. And what to speak of if you're remembering Krishna's lila and form in Vrindavan. Wow, that's really nice. I mean, you know, the kind of the lowest levels, the universal form, okay, the trees are the hairs and the birds are his artistic ability, right, and the rivers are his veins, and the mountains are his bones. Look at the Rockies, all the beautiful bones of God. I mean, that's really good. But if you look at the mountains and you think, oh, I remember when Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill, right? It was honing up, and you start going into the lila. I remember when Krishna and Balaram were being chased by Jarasandha, and they jumped off the mountain, and they ran away, and he thought they were dead, and they fooled him for a long time, and you start getting in, and you then you forget all about the Rocky Mountains, and you're in the lila. That's wonderful. You'll become a pure devotee very quickly. Seriously, I'm very serious. Thank you so much. Anybody else? See Krishna in everybody, because he's there, right? Yes? You can, with some rock star, you can think about, you know, when the rock star twangs, you know, they play one thing on their guitar, and everybody goes, ah! Right? They do that, right? Just one note. Do you know we have the ability, if we know a song well, we have the ability to recognize that song and this person playing it by one note? Do you know that? We have the ability to recognize a musical artist by one note. Isn't that cool? So just think about Krishna. He plays one note on his flute. It says he plays the fifth note on his flute. And all these billions of women, they don't just faint. They run out of their houses. They leave their chapatis burning on the stove, and they leave their milk boiling over, and their relatives say, well, where are you going? Hey! Yeah, what are you doing? I have to go right now. Where are you going? I have to go. You know, when some young girl, 14, 15, 16, going to meet her lover, she usually takes a long time to get dressed and she's real careful. You know, I just have to go. Never mind. No, just run. One earring. I'm running out the door. And they just run. One note. And the rivers start flowing backwards, and the stone platforms around the trees melt and reform into other shapes, and the birds get stunned, and the calves are drinking milk, and they just stop, and the milk starts pouring out of their mouth because they're not even drinking it anymore. And if you meditate like that, after a while, you won't be interested in the rock star anymore. You're like, big deal. This guy's never melted any stones. And all he cares about is his ego. Ultimately, Krishna cares about love. Right? Yes? And then you'll very naturally become detached. If you try to become detached by force of will, it will not work long term. I mean, Krishna says. Right? You've had experience with that. I'm sure we've all tried to become detached by force of will. Maybe some of you are smart and never did that, but I think most of us have tried that technique. It doesn't work very well. It works temporarily, slightly. Is that all right? Thank you very much for your hospitality. Yes, you had a question? Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.